Ready to launch your business? Get started with the commerce platform made for entrepreneurs. Shopify is specially designed to help you start, run, and grow your business with easy, customizable themes that let you build your brand, marketing tools that get your products out there, integrated shipping solutions that actually save you time. From startups to scale-ups, online, in person, and on the go, Shopify is made for entrepreneurs like you.
Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com/setup.
Hello, everybody. This is Stacy from The Advisor, and I'd just like to give a huge thank you to our sponsor, Dr. Bradley Nelson, the brilliant mind behind the Emotion Code and the Body Code, and a New York Times bestseller. His groundbreaking work is helping people all over the world to release trapped emotions and unlock their body's natural healing power. Now, today, I am so thrilled to welcome Dr. Nima Rahani, and a world-renowned expert in helping people break free from trauma bonds and codependency to create healthy, fulfilling relationships. His mission is to guide individuals through emotional healing process so they can step into their own authentic power. Dr. Nima, I am so excited to welcome you to the show. Please say hello to our listeners and tell our listeners a little about yourself.
Hello, Stacy. It is fantastic to be here. This is a really important conversation that is about health and healing. And as a chiropractor who's been in the mind-body wellness industry for about 25 years, I was noticing something with patients that were coming in with physical ailments, but there was a lot of trapped emotion, there was a lot of conflict, grief, unprocessed grief, shame, and all at the hands of ruptures and relational conflict that hasn't healed. And so I thought, wouldn't it be cool if I could offer something a lot deeper? And in my practice, started doing these workshops called Life Skills for a Stressful World. And I noticed that the patients that came in to learn about how stress was impacting the problems that they were coming to see me with, they learned how to become their own medicine, because the doctor of the future is actually the patient, I believe. And teaching them how to become their own medicine, things started to evolve. I started to fall passionately in love with the teaching aspect of being a chiropractor. Doctor actually means teacher. And so when I wasn't until I got married and then went through a divorce and a series of failed relationships leading to a really toxic one that woke me up to trying to fill the gaps in what I was missing in my life. And I now teach what I needed to learn, which is learning and understanding healing attachments, breaking that push and pull dynamic between the anxious and the avoidant. And understanding trauma bonds, codependency, and learning how to take whatever you're triggered by a partner and learn how to self-regulate and then take ruptures that can happen and turn it into deeper intimacy. So life is relational, and we don't get the skills of how to manage, how to repair from conflict and rupture. And so that causes a downstream issue of health. And so I really love teaching people the most critical skills that I never learned that wreaked havoc in my relationships. And now becoming trigger proof was born. It's a cognitive and a somatic methodology that helps you learn how to navigate conflict and going from insecure type of relationships to secure ones. So I'm now married, have a beautiful son who's 4 years old at the recording of this, starts kindergarten. And I love teaching a global community of people really committed to breaking cycles of intergenerational trauma. And that's basically what I do, but I'll always be a chiropractor at heart.
I love that. You know, I see so many people, especially in the chiropractic offices, they're all different age groups that come in, from babies to elders, and so many people are affected. Yeah. It's so many people are affected by emotions and they don't even realize that they're carrying so much emotion, so much baggage. And my famous quote, I would always say 70% illnesses are caused by stress. And then one time a doctor came on the show and he goes, no, 100% of illnesses are caused by stress. And a lot of people will say that, I hear this excuse and I don't like it. They say, well, they were born in this generation, so this is the way, this is normal for them, But I believe that, I've seen, through doing so many shows, people from all different age groups have realized that I'm not happy. Life isn't going the way I want it to go. I'm suffering emotionally and I gotta make a change, So I think it doesn't matter the time we were born, what era, change is possible, changing the way we live and not being codependent and being able to change the way we feel, the way we think, the way we react can just do so much for us. How do you feel about that?
Well, that's the concept of becoming trigger proof. I mean, it all begins with in the moment. I mean, we all consciously say that there are elements in our lives that we want to change, but then there are unconscious complexes at play that are keeping us reliving certain patterns. And until we make the unconscious conscious, as Carl Jung says, until we make the unconscious conscious, it will rule your life and you'll call it fate. And so, there is a neuroscience to change, to behavioral change. And so just that's beyond the surface, that's unconscious. So becoming trigger proof is the art and neuroscience of seeking and finding these unconscious complexes that come up in our triggers and using them to find those younger parts of ourselves that we're trying to get their needs met. And find better strategies of getting those needs met than the way the childlike parts of us used to do it. And so we can change. Is it easy? No, it's not. But it does sometimes take a guide to help us find our blind spots so that we can all find parts of us that need to grow and then learn the magic, the medicine of becoming our own healer. And so that's really what I've dedicated my life to.
I love that. Now, how do personally, how do you define codependency, and how does it differ from simple caring too much about something or
Yeah,
someone?
great question. If you were raised in an environment where your emotional needs were not met, which is very common, you were told, don't cry or I'll give you something to cry about. That didn't happen. You're being too sensitive. Or any request of connection, bid for connection to your parents were met by shutdown or dismissing or denying your experience. It causes you to be raised not feeling seen. And there's a big wound of, I don't feel seen. And so when a child isn't seen by their mother, what ends up happening is the child comes up with an unconscious solution, one of two solutions. Solution number one of not feeling seen, the child then creates this false self, this grandiose false self that says, I am perfect. This fantasy kind of false self that's godlike, that is all powerful, all knowing, all beautiful, right? And so this and be, that rage of not feeling seen, they internalize it, but they, excuse me, they externalize it, right? So this solution to not feeling seen, solution number one, we're going to call narcissism. We're going to call narcissistic kind of solution. The second solution to not feeling seen, this the child can't express their rage for not feeling seen towards their caregiver because that's going to, that's going to cause them to be not get their needs met. So that rage, instead of externalizing it, they internalize it. And then they say, you know what? Who, they create a false self. And that false self that they create is, I'm going to become whatever I need to become and hyper attune and become hyper aware and hyper focused with what the people around me are thinking and feeling so that I can be super duper attuned and hyper vigilantly focused on them so that I can become whoever I need to be in order to get my needs met. And that is the codependent solution to not feeling seen. Same wound, same exact same wound of not being seen, but solution number one, we externalize and we look for validation out. We look for, we create this false self that's grandiose. Solution number two is this, the codependency. Now, growing up like a moth to a flame, the narcissistic part is a magnet for the codependent. It is like the codependent and the narcissist are, which are just roles. I don't mean to diagnose or label people, but this is two sides to a coin. It's like a perfect match for one another because this one is very boisterous, is outgoing, and knows what they want, is very forward, right? And grandiose. And this one is like an echo. It echoes whatever this one is saying and feeds the ego of that. And so this one has leadership and this one has validation. And they become this amazing, oh my gosh, the first phase of when they meet is love bombing. Oh my gosh, you are the most amazing. And so the narcissist catches the, sees the energetically, spots this kind of divine union that seems like it was written in the stars. And then uses love bombing, driven by the fear of abandonment, uses love bombing as a man, sex bombing as a woman to get that attachment hook in. And the codependent, once they let down their guard, they feel this not feeling seen. They strike a deal with one another. The narcissist basically says, I'm going to be the mother that you didn't have, and I'm going to see you, and I'm going to validate you, and I'm going to, I see you the way that, and I'm going to treat you the way that your mother never did, with absolute love bombing and pedestalization. And the other, and here's what's going to happen, then you're going to be my mother. You're going to be the mother that I didn't have, where I now will test to see if you're going to be my mother by being abusive, by withdrawing love, by withdrawing affection, because no mother ever leaves their child. So it's kind of like they strike up a deal, this dual mothership, where they finally feel like they're getting their needs met that they didn't get in childhood. And this during the love bombing phase, where they're co-pedestalizing one another, it feels like love at first sight. It feels like, oh my gosh, you know, I love at first sight, but it's not love at first sight. What happens is the codependent falls in love with an idealized version of themselves through the narcissist's gaze. And so this continues for the first 6 to 8 months until finally there is a crisis of disillusionment. Something happens where that fantasy is popped. You know, the 3 months, 6 months, 8 months, a year, where the truth comes out. The veil is now dropped. And the love bombing then turns to devaluing and discarding. And then it becomes like intermittent reinforcement, where through the sudden transition from love bombing to devaluing, the codependent is now feeling like a drug addict, having their drug taken away, waiting for their next hit. And through the process of what's called intermittent reinforcement, they go back and forth with the push and pull, going through these phases of love bombing, devaluing, discarding. Oftentimes it can get abusive, but essentially, they are acting out this dance that was unhealed in childhood. What they don't know is that beneath the surface, their unhealed wounds are a perfect match for one another with an opportunity to heal if they do the work, or they go through this exhaustive push and pull dynamic. And codependency, basically, they become so what's called enmeshed with one another that their emotions become like one. It's kind of like, why are you upset? Are you mad at me? Are you mad at me? Like, what did I do? It's kind of like that person's emotions become yours, and you're going through this exhaustive dance. And essentially what happens is codependency is I need you for safety. Whereas a healthy relationship, which what I call a co-regulating relationship, which is secure, which is, I don't need you. However, you remind me of the safety that I can find within myself. So codependency is marked, characterized by, you know, like constantly like apologizing for, you know, everything, thinking that you're constantly like at fault, blaming yourself, being so preoccupied with what the other person is thinking, saying, doing, looking to the other person and how they're feeling to know how you're supposed to feel. And that's called enmeshment, where the boundaries, the two are not even separate. And you, it's really exhausting. It wears away at your health. And by becoming trigger proof, by healing what this is really about, you have a chance of stepping up and either them stepping up and meeting you there or having the courage to finally leave and then find a healthy relationship where you can actually have a co-regulating one rather than a codependent one.
Yeah. Oh, so well said. You know, I've seen people like I know somebody that consists.
Everybody knows somebody in that situation.
They
or
would
has been there or is in that situation.
Yeah, they would do nothing wrong, but they would consistently say, oh, I'm so, so sorry. You know, I hope I didn't offend you. You know, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. And I'm like, you didn't do anything wrong. You know, like, why do you keep asking, you know, saying I'm sorry, you know?
That's a fawning, people-pleasing response. Very common in people who identify with codependency. You get it. It's called the fawn response.
Wow. You know, now what are some of the early life experiences or patterns that can predispose someone to form trauma bonds?
Well, if you, like I said, any type of, you know, the parenting where, you know, trauma, any trauma where you felt abandoned, neglected, physically abused, that causes you to have to separate from yourself. When you have ruptures with your parents, where there is anger, there wasn't an opportunity to repair, right? What happens when a child has a tantrum or there's a problem or the children aren't taught, we don't have the skills when we're born to regulate our emotions. We need our parents for that. So when we are having big emotions, emotional outbursts, tantrums, and, you know, parenting is hard. You know, I have a 4-year-old. Parenting is hard. So I'm not perfect. Sometimes I lose my patience. But what happens is afterwards, I repair with my son. I show him that my system is safe and I can bring him from a place of activation back into safety and teach him that I am a safe place where all of his emotions are validated. But most of us, myself included, weren't raised with that. So we are raised with parents who dismiss our emotions, deny our emotions, tell us they invalidate our emotions and or abandon, neglect, or just generally you're there and watching your parents go through their own codependent type of situation where they're modeling it to you. You know, how was conflict modeled to you? Was there rupture and repair, right? So if you were raised and you weren't given the information or the scenario where who you are is enough, you don't have to perform for love. You know, if you were ever put in a position where you had to perform for love or you had to be a certain way, you are conditioned to abandon yourself. Mm-hmm. Love means in order for me to belong, I must abandon myself.
Yeah.
Right? So that framework, unconscious as it is, you take it into a relationship dynamic, and all you know is love is self-abandonment. And so abandoning myself, my desires, my needs, my emotions, in order to maintain connection, if that message was implanted to you as a child, then it's of no surprise that you're going to repeat that pattern, and you're going to marry the exact same type of dynamic you end up with in childhood. It's kind of like you're a fishbowl. You're a goldfish that was born into a fishbowl of dirty water. You don't know that it's dirty. You just think that it's water. So you're going to go seek out the same type of toxicity because it feels familiar, and familiarity is safety, even though it's not quote unquote safe. It might feel safe to your nervous system because that's all you know, it's familiar.
Do a lot of people come to realization that, you know, they are codependent, they do have some issues, they need some help, that, you know, that this behavior, this relationship is wearing me down?
Yeah.
Do the people realize? Because, you know, denial, you know, I've written books where, you know, denial, I've written huge chapters on denial, because so many people don't want to really, you know, realize that, you know, hey, I'm in a relationship that's not healthy for me.
Yeah.
I'm in a relationship that's deteriorating my health. I'm in a relationship that's going to destroy me if I keep continuing in this path.
It's not really necessarily a conscious denial, Stacey. It's actually familiar. How do you know that it's like it's normalized to have relationships like that, right? You just repeat it. The thing that people reach out to me, they don't necessarily come to me saying, hey, I'm codependent. Can you help me? Unless they've been following my YouTube channel or they've been following my podcast, they're like, wow, what you're saying is true. Or they did my attachment style quiz and they're like, I'm an avoidant. I'm a dismissive, you know, I am a disorganized, you know, fearful avoidant. So they don't have the language. What they do know is that they say, you know, I'm in a, you know, I'm not sure. Am I the problem in this relationship, or are they? I'm just not feeling fulfilled. My emotions are constantly dismissed or denied. Every time I bring something up, they get defensive. I can't express myself in this relationship. I don't feel seen. I don't feel heard. I don't feel listened to. You know, usually it's the woman that is reaching out with those complaints. The men reach out to me. Here's what they complain about. They're like, my wife just left me and I'm blindsided. And, you know, it's not usually the guy who's like, you know, what's going on? Should I stay or should I go? Unless they've done some deep work with him, with him, it's usually, oh my gosh, I'm about to lose my partner and it's really taken me out and I don't want to lose my marriage. And now I'm researching it and I'm discovering all these things about myself. Usually the thing that wakes men up, unfortunately, is a wake up call where the wife is basically saying, I've had enough. I've been trying to talk to you for so many years. You're not listening. I don't feel emotionally seen. It's really, it's really then when they come in and they do my overview experience, the workshop, they go, holy shit, I'm in a codependent relationship. Holy crap, this is a replay of my childhood. So depending on how aware they are in the journey, their experience within relationship is that, why do I keep dating the same type of person? Why do we keep having the same argument? We keep thinking it's resolved, but it's not. I felt betrayed, or I've had a betrayal and I just can't let it go, even though that they're doing everything. I'm just, what's wrong with me? Because I keep having these flashbacks and I just can't let it go. So there is a multitude of reasons, but the main thing is that this is a toxic relationship. I'm feeling unfulfilled. Should I stay or should I go? Or if they're single, they are in a place where they're like, am I too broken to have a secure relationship? I've been so hurt in the past. I don't know if I'll ever be ready to date again. And so it's learning how to heal, then developing the skills so that you have your confidence and your mojo to be able to discern the right ones from the wrong ones, or being able to say, hey, I'm growing at this emotional level, emotional immaturity that I have in my relationship, I'm going to rise here and either my partner joins me or we can part ways as friends. So the work begins there, and it's all about rewiring our nervous systems to create safety with a secure bond. Because if all you've ever known has been codependency and being gaslit and invalidated and not having your emotions met, then you don't even know what a secure relationship is. So it's teaching your body how to find safety in secure relationships. Because if you haven't known safety and security, all you've known is that cortisol, that stress, that push and pull chaos within relationships. A secure relationship will feel like absolute boredom to you. So it's really about teaching your nervous system how to find safety in security and not seek out chaos because it was familiar.
Now, when it comes to this, you know, you're definitely going to need somebody like yourself to help people and guide them and give them step-by-step.
We need a guide. I didn't get here without a guide.
Yeah. Now, is there some little exercises they can do at home to help them along the way that you suggest,
To help? Well, really, to help you along the way, really, the first step is really to, pardon my language, unfuck your nervous system, right? Because the very first step, you know, making sure you're getting chiropractic care, I'm a chiropractor, just getting that help from the outside to bring your nervous system into safety. It all begins with that and mastering the nervous system through the breath, through, you know, I'm sure that there, you know, exercise, getting your body moving, to bring your state from sympathetic nervous system, which is fight or flight, or most commonly what we refer to in somatic work as the dorsal vagal shutdown, where, you know, they call it depression, but I don't believe that it's depression. I believe it's a nervous system under, it's trying to protect itself. It's dissociation. So our first job is to learn how to operate the machinery of our nervous system, because you cannot get clarity on should I stay or go. You cannot have a healthy relationship if you don't have a healthy relationship with your nervous system and your body. So the first real step is to learn how to get into the body, into the breath, and to expand your capacity for your emotions. And so the best place that we begin, I start all of my clients off with what's called the four permissions. And what it is that most of the time we do therapies, we take medications, there's addictions, there's distractions, there's dissociation, all to avoid our feelings. And what I have here is a Hoberman sphere as an illustration of our job isn't to get rid of negative emotion. It's to expand our capacity to sit and feel them.
Yeah.
So the four permissions is an acronym for SOAP. SOAP. It's safe to feel my anger, my shame. Mm-hmm. It's okay to feel my anger, my shame, my guilt. I'm allowed to feel my anger, my shame. I have permission to feel. So it's called the four permissions, giving ourselves permission to feel all the emotions that we never gave ourselves permission to feel as a child, because our parents didn't know how to hold space for them. Because a child cannot regulate emotions that they're not allowed to feel. So it's almost like our job then, when you're in that space, is to learn how to reparent yourself and change your entire relationship with the way that you experience emotions. And most of the time we do therapies to try to eliminate emotions, right? Yeah. And so rather than learning how to use them and allow them to move through us, we try to stuff them, suppress them, deny them, or altogether just kind of like pretend they don't even exist and repress them. There's a conscious suppression or an unconscious repression where we deny that we even have it, right? Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, wow, you're really angry. No, I'm not. I'm not angry. I am not angry. It's like, oh, okay. It's a denial, right? It's a dissociation from those parts of ourselves. It's a deflection. So it's really learning using our kind of like in our Cycle Breakers Academy, I teach people how to get into your body and to expand your capacity to feel all your rage. Expand your capacity. Like there's a bunch of anger that we're all carrying from childhood. And the big part of healing it isn't just talking about it. It's moving that through that energy, moving that energy through your body.
Oh, 100%. And one of the biggest things that I've learned is that it's okay to have these feelings. Sometimes people they make it like, oh, why are you feeling like this? It's not right to feel like this.
I shouldn't
They
be feeling this way.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? We all have the right to feel anyway. Those are our feelings. And if I
Yeah.
feel sad, if I feel angry, if I feel upset, those are my feelings. Everybody's different. Everybody, handles things differently. And for some people, it might not affect them. For some others, it will affect them. But those are my feelings, and it's okay to feel that way. And it
How
took me.
we respond to those feelings, that's where the work is. Feeling them
Yes.
is one thing, but there's usually a story, you know, oh, I feel anger. Now I'm also ashamed that I have anger, or I have such shame and now I have grief that I have shame. So we have this kind of shame binding to our
Yeah.
emotions. And the first step to healing all of this trauma bond stuff, codependency, is to rewire our relationship to our emotions themselves. And the four permissions is literally the very first step. It's
Yeah.
safe to feel, I'm allowed to feel. Right. And so when we don't allow others to feel their emotions, it's because we are making up a story that they feel that way
Yeah.
about, like, oh, you feel anger? That means I'm bad. And so I don't want you to be angry. Don't be angry. Don't feel guilt. Don't feel that way. I shouldn't feel that way. That kind of language is very, it lacks awareness because we can't control our feelings. Our
Yes.
feelings, they come up unconsciously, automatically. It's how we master the art of riding the waves and bringing ourselves back to safety rather than suppressing ourselves or suppressing other people. And so it's especially important for children because when a child is crying, immediately as a parent, I feel guilty that they're crying and I want to stop them. Stop crying, stop crying, stop crying, so that I don't feel what I'm feeling.
Yes.
I got to stop you from feeling what you're feeling because it's making me feel a certain way. And so
Right.
this enmeshment, this emotional enmeshment, causes us to fracture from ourselves. And the first step towards undoing all of that, which takes practice, I'm doing this weekly with my academy, is to shift our relationship with our emotions so we're not resisting every aspect of who we are.
Yeah.
That from there, our relationship with others becomes a lot smoother because of our relationship with ourselves.
Yes, that is 100%. Now, what are the most subtle signs that someone is stuck in a trauma bond?
The subtle signs, essentially, is this, it's like an addiction. It's you are completely preoccupied with what the other person is thinking or doing. Whenever I'm talking to these people on a kind of like a discovery call or what I call the intuitive blind spot session, I ask them about how they're feeling and then they talk about the other person. They go right to the other person. I said, I didn't ask about them. I asked about you. That's a red flag for me that this person is codependent. They just have an identity that's based on orienting externally. It's an external oriented type of thing. You're constantly focusing on what they're thinking and feeling. If they're in a mood, you make it about you, right? If they're in a mood, you immediately make it I'm bad, or you dismiss them, you deny them, and then you get into a place where you're constantly scanning, tracking the other person. You're withholding your truth because you don't want to upset the other person. The trauma bond really is characterized by the cycle of, love bombing, then devaluing and then discarding. I don't want to be in your life. And then all of a sudden you make up and it's just honeymoon phase again, and then devaluing and then discarding. And yes, this also can overlap with the cycle of abuse as well, but it's kind of like a spectrum. So it can become super abusive, or it can just be through this exhausting cycle where in a month, let's say in a 30-day cycle, you're like breaking up and then having crazy makeup sex and then breaking up. And then it's just one of the subtle signs is this is a familiar pattern. I feel like I'm reliving my relationship with my mother or my father.
Yeah. Oh, 100. That's so true. Now, you know, when you see that happening, how do you dislocate yourself from, you know, not being able to, you know, like you constantly watching that person. Oh, that person is doing this, and I can't, you know, I'm not at that point yet. You know, like I've worked so hard, and that person has that, and I should be there at that level. How do you dislocate, like, and separate yourself where you are focusing on just you and trying to improve your life and be codependent and not be, you know, and not focus so much on the other person and what they're doing? Because, you know, many times we, you know, we're at different levels. Everybody's different, you know, and, you know, someone could, you know, we never know what's going on behind the scenes, you know. And so how do you separate yourself?
Like comparing yourself, you mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. How do you stop doing that? There's two answers for me. The first is to cultivate a practice of orienting into your body. The second that I watch you and I see that you're so much further in your career, immediately that creates a constriction in my body. And the first thing that I do is, instead of focusing on you, I turn the orienting back into the body, noticing where you're constricting. Then what I would do is I would ask myself, how old does this part of me feel? Mm-hmm. Because this is going to be reflective of a younger part that maybe had a competition with a sibling that was, you know, in school and wanted the attention, or you were 5 years old and your parents just had the next child, and now you have a baby sister now, and now you're like, oh my God, I'm not the most important thing anymore. And so what's happening is something is being triggered. And so our work then becomes to orient into the body and closing our eyes and, you know, doing the trigger proof practices of going in and finding this younger part of you where there's the constriction, and then parenting them. You know, how would you want to parent that aspect of you? How would you want that aspect of you being parented? What would be an amazing parent to that younger self? And so by validating their experience, not making it wrong, and validating that, say, oh my God, I shouldn't be jealous. Oh, I hate that I'm having those feelings. Well, it's normal. The younger self naturally wants to belong and wants to be important, and any type of competing attachment threatens that younger part. So it's about noticing it, not resisting it, not making it wrong. It's okay. It's safe to feel jealous and envious. It's okay to feel jealous and envious. I'm allowed to feel jealous and envious. I have permission to feel jealous and envious. And once you validate those parts, all of a sudden the resistance against it is gone. You can relax to it. Your adult self comes online, and now you can lovingly allow that part of you to be there, right? Yeah. Because that's why we grow, right? Yeah. I have a twin brother, so I'm constantly growing up, comparing. I still do it. We still have that experience, right? Oh, he bought a house. Oh, now, you know, before it was like, oh, I made the baseball team. He wanted to make the baseball team. That was when we were like 9, 10 years old. Now we're in our, you know, we're 50 almost. And now it's like, oh, I bought the big house. Now he's got to buy the big house, right? I've lost weight. He's got to lose weight. Like, so my work isn't to shame those parts of me. It's to validate those parts of me. It's to meet those parts of me with compassion. instead of shaming them. And so that this becomes a spiritual practice of orienting internally. Notice how the answer is, oh my gosh, I go in, I notice the trigger, that trigger becomes a portal to find parts of me to love. And it all comes back to orienting internally.
I love that. Now, how can someone distinguish between a healthy relationship and one fueled by codependency?
Yeah. It's a spectrum, right? What we're looking for is what's called interdependency. Codependency is my sense of safety is in your hands. Interdependency is co-regulation is I remind you of the safety that's within you and you do the same for me. And I'm married now and we have a very healthy, secure relationship, but it doesn't mean that we're completely needless. It's a duality. It's I don't need you and I'm choosing you every day.
Yeah.
Right? I don't need you. And so some of the traits of a secure relationship is, you feel safe close to one another and you feel safe in parting ways too. Like when you're not together, right? Whereas the insecure dynamics, there's always a little bit of drama that happens once you get together and once you leave because it brings up abandonment wounds. And so having that sense of safety, both together and apart, right? Mm-hmm. That is one of the signs of secure attachment. Just feeling like a general goodness with one another most of the time, mm-hmm. right? Feeling like a general state of goodness that this person really, we really have each other's backs. Like we're a functioning pair, but we're like a team. Like we're teammates rather than opponent, opposition. And I know during arguments, it can feel like we're opposing, but in the grand scheme of things, I know she's got my back and she knows that I have my back. Okay.
Yeah.
Another telltale sign is, when there is really great news, you want to tell this person. When there's bad news, you want to tell each other. It's like you're the first point of contact, right? And one of the telltale signs of a healthy, secure relationship is that when there's a rupture and there's a bid for connection, whether it's, when we argue, my wife comes and drops a, we haven't spoken in a while, but she'll come and drop a tea on my on my desk. That's a bid for connection. That's how she bids for connection.
Right.
Then I can be really generous with her olive branch, right? So when there's a bid for connection, hey, look at this, look at the tree there, look at these flowers. The other person responds lovingly and openly and receives that other person's bid for connection. That's one of the more telltale signs that this relationship is on solid footing, is that the couples that are receptive to each other's bid for connection have more secure relationships. And so, there's a bunch of them. I have a YouTube video called "How to Know You're in a secure relationship." What does that even look like? But it's interesting in my Cycle Breakers Academy. When we had this training, people are like, I wouldn't even know a secure relationship if it jumped up and bit me in the butt, because all they've known has been this codependency type of thing. So secure relationship is really feeling emotionally safe with the other person, safe to express yourself, knowing that there's a general goodness with one another, and trust that you will repair after a rupture.
Right. Oh, I like that a lot. Now, what are the first steps a person can take when they realize that a codependent or a trauma-bonded relationship?
What's the first step?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well,
what's the first step a person can take when they realize they're in a codependent or a trauma-bonded relationship?
Yeah, what their first step is to really The first step is to learn how to master your nervous system, because now your nervous system, if you're looking for safety outside of you, that means that you're outsourcing your sense of self-worth. And so what our work then becomes to be the author of our own internal safety, finding safety from within. So mastering the nervous system, getting a guide, finding a community to master the nervous system, to learn how to use these triggers that come up within the relationship dynamic, instead of going into fault and blame, to turn inward, to find the parts of you that need healing and to really integrate with these complexes that are arising within this dynamic. The first step is to realize that it's not about your partner. It's right. about the unhealed parts of you from your past. And it's really important to go and find the child inside of you and to learn how to really heal with the younger parts.
Oh, I like that. Now, what are some of the common emotional challenges people face when leaving a trauma bond, and how can they navigate themselves successfully?
The most common, can you ask that again in a different way? What's the most common challenges in trying to leave a trauma bond?
Yeah. So what is the most common emotional challenges that people face when they're leaving a trauma bond and relationship, and how can they navigate themselves successfully? So when they're leaving a relationship, you know, there's a lot going on emotionally. How could they leave that relationship successfully? So they, instead of getting stuck or instead of going through a lot of different, emotions and not knowing what to do next,
don't ever think, it's kind of like addiction recovery. Don't think that you can do it alone. It is critical to have a community around you that is holding you to your highest, because you want to lean on them. Have the resources, build up the resources, find a guide, find a community, so that you can learn. The most important thing is that, you know, our fear of abandonment, fear of being alone, you know, it's really about finding that lonely little boy or girl inside of you and learning how to give them what they didn't receive inside, and to have a guide and a community walking you through that entire path. You know, in our Cycle Breakers Academy, people are in a should I stay or go dynamic, and their partners oftentimes are not on board with taking responsibility to do the healing. So they know that the partner is not going to step up and join. It's like, I can't leave because I'm so scared. I'm terrified of being the bad guy. I'm terrified of being alone. I'm terrified of not having the resources. But to take that leap with a guide and a community who isn't going to force you into anything, and yes. learn through the process, as each emotion, as each trigger is going to come up, there's yes. grief. You got to learn how to alchemize it and become trigger proof to it. Not that it's a bad thing, but it's to actually learn how to experience grief without running away from it, right? Otherwise, you're like, to avoid the grief, you're going to stay in a really shitty situation.
Yeah.
Right? The second is to learn how to expand your capacity for guilt.
Mm-hmm.
Guilt yeah. is the price of admission for leaving a trauma bond. Because yeah. a part of you feels so guilty because you see the innocent little child inside of them, and you know that by leaving them, they're going to be abandoned again, and you're replaying their own childhood wounds. So many people stay in a trauma bond because they're afraid of the guilt of feeling like the bad guy. So you got to learn how to expand your capacity for feeling like the bad guy, become trigger proof to grief, to guilt, to shame. The next piece is, once you start to learn how your unconsciousness contributed to it without fault or blame, you're yeah. still going to start to beat yourself up and blame yourself. So you got to learn how to trigger proof yourself to shame, because you're like, oh my God, I should have known. I shouldn't have abandoned myself. I should have left sooner. I shouldn't have married this person. All of these shoulds start to bubble to the surface, and it's going to bring up a lot of shame. So you got to learn how to be with shame. This is yeah. why people don't leave trauma bonds, because they know what to expect when they're in it. even though it's shitty, it's painful, but it's familiar. They know what it is. But to leave the familiar, they're gonna have to feel fear. They're gonna have to feel loneliness. They're gonna have to feel guilt. They're gonna have to feel shame. Then there's a shit ton of resentment that they've been holding on to, right? And they don't know what to do with that. They either are run by resentment or they've been suppressing their resentment. They're like, oh, I don't feel any. And so it's this human being who's developed an identity who has no capacity for any negative emotion. And so having a guide in a community learn teach you how to sit with the discomfort so that it alchemizes into love over time. This is the only way that it has worked, and to feel the grief that you're avoiding by staying in that relationship. So it's like you're either choosing the resentment to be in the relationship, or you're choosing guilt and grief. So you got to trade in resentment for guilt and grief, and that's the normal process. But many people just don't have the capacity for it. So they will stay in resentment and then slowly wither away, slowly die inside. And people do die very, very a lot faster when you're stuck in this toxic dynamic. It's scary. It's like addiction recovery. Essentially, you're gonna have to become somebody else. I had to be somebody else, right? I was in my relationship situation and it had gotten abusive. And I knew that had I left, she was going to use the fact that I slapped her. We were very public in my community around it. I knew that I was like, please don't, please, 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 please don't file a police report. Please don't. And so she's like, I'll think about it. So she used the threat of potentially filing a police report. She used that threat to keep me in the relationship to the point where I was terrified to leave. This is why I understand people who are terrified to leave. So for an entire year, I stayed. Almost like 11 months, I stayed because I knew that had I left, that my reputation was going to be smeared. And I couldn't afford that because I had built up this career and this kind of like Dr. Nima character, right? So I had to do the work, and the work was for me to sit and feel my shame and my resentment. And I got to a point of self-worth that, so much anxiety that I was living a lie that I knew that had I continued, I would die. Like I just wanted to end my life. So people don't leave trauma bonds unless staying in them becomes more threatening and painful than leaving. So finally, I got to a place of inner work, did the polyvagal theory, somatic experiencing, inner child work, so that I could love all the parts of me that I was trying to hide. And finally, I stepped up and I finally left. And sure as anything, her story of being a team changed to domestic abuse survivor, and she finally, a couple of years later, put a case together and filed that police report out of revenge. And so then I went through, and then I got married, and I had a child. And 1 week after my child was born, I was arrested, and I went through a criminal proceeding. And I wouldn't have been able, because I was prepared to deal with the consequences of and the shame of leaving, because I knew that staying, which was what she wanted, staying was going to be more devastating for me than the reputation damage of leaving. And so leaving a trauma bond is my specialty because I had to live it. And so now I help people break free from it. It's not a fun process. I don't recommend doing it alone. I sure as heck didn't do it alone. But it is a critical kind of initiation if you want to live an amazing life. And I live an amazing life right now. My relationship's amazing. I love my family. I love the message that I'm teaching. I've written a book about the whole experience. Becoming trigger proof to the opinions of others. Being understanding that leaving is going to piss that person off, and they are going to possibly smear you. They are going to drag your name through the mud. They might even try to hurt you in some way. But to gather the resources and the team to develop the strength and the capacity to find your sense of self-worth on the other side of it. And my life is a demonstration that it's possible.
I love that. This is definitely something that you really need a guide. You really need a coach. You really need, a professional to help you through it.
I did not do it alone.
Yeah, I think it's virtually impossible to do it by yourself. You mentioned a few exercises you could do at home to make you feel better, but definitely need somebody to kind of gear you step by step on how to do it, and just and then follow through with that individual and make sure that you're doing everything the right way and have that person take you
Books
along.
are helpful. Podcasts are helpful. Even having a therapist to talk to is helpful, but talk therapy does not rewire the identity that makes you a perfect person to be in a codependent trauma bond. You must rewire that identity and heal the actual attachment wounds. And so this is the focus of my work now, is helping people at a nervous system level shift their identity out of codependent patterns, out of the victim story, into powerful co-creator, right? Not about blame, not about victim blaming, not about, fault. Those words don't apply, because it's never anybody's fault. We just find ourselves in these situations because they're familiar, and it's about breaking that spell and healing intergenerational trauma. That's really what the work is.
Right. Now, where can people find your book, and tell us a little about your book?
Yeah, the book is coming out next year. The best way to start is to get on my newsletter. And I have an attachment style quiz. I'll provide the link there where you find out what your attachment style is. And then I give you information on how to rewire that.
Yeah.
So the book, when it comes out or when it's available on pre-order, the people with the first dibs are on my email list. Mm-hmm. And there's all a bunch of bonuses and opportunities to really get started on the work before the book comes out. But it all begins with that attachment style quiz that I'll provide for you.
Oh, I love that. Now tell us a little about the services that you provide.
Yeah, it is a kind of a remote, and I have retreats where people who are really looking how to reset their whole nervous system, to heal from the past, to heal with mother wound, father wound, becoming trigger proof to guilt, to shame, to expand your capacity for other people to dislike you or to disagree with you, and you not abandon yourself, to heal from the fawn response. It's all part of the cycle breaker, kind of like the academy that I teach. And the best way to start is the event that I have. It's called the trigger proof experience. It's called the overview experience. And it is a 3-day event that I turned into a 3-day live event in person that COVID hit. And I turned into a 6-hour Zoom event, which I teach you the mastery of rupture and repair. All of the skills that I did not have and my relationships showed. This is for people that are ready to put down the blame game, ready to let go of their story from the past and learn how to break that cycle so that their children can be raised in homes that are a sanctuary, not a battleground. And so I teach you the art of rupture repair and secure high level secure relating skills at the overview experience. And it's all kind of on my website. It's all there on my website, which I'll provide the link there. And easy way to get a hold of me and my links on YouTube, Dr. Nima on Instagram, sending me a DM or hit reply on any of the emails that you get. And then it comes directly into my inbox, and happy to answer any questions that come up.
I love that. I think what you're doing is great because I think so many people, suffer from codependency and they suffer from trauma. I think we all have gone through trauma in our lives, and I think
Everybody.
everybody's gone through trauma in their lives. And I think it's really hard sometimes to learn how to break free. I think a lot of people have a very difficult time, breaking free from trauma and codependency. They don't know how. They don't even know where to begin, and I think having somebody like yourself, to guide them that has experience in the field can really help people, because living with codependency and living with trauma in your life, is a very difficult thing. It really eats us up alive,
Yeah, it really creates friction in our lives. And the good news is it doesn't have to be that way. I realize that, life is short, and unresolved wounding that's trapped in your nervous system impacts the way that you even experience life. And so by putting all of my focus inward and clearing that, my life has become a beautiful creative expression, and my life has now become my message.
By letting go of all the codependencies that I've had in the past, and being able to let go of trauma, I feel like a whole new person. It changed my life dramatically. It changed the way I think, the way I act, the way I am today.
Yeah.
And I'm a happy, positive person,
Yeah.
and so many
The
times we
biggest
walk.
change is how we react to things.
Yes, and when I react to things now, I don't get upset. I just take a deep breath. I step take a step back. I think about how I'm going to approach the situation or how I'm going to say something, and I just, I say it very politely, very nicely. And if I think I can see the other person is very angry and it's not going to go anywhere, I just very politely just walk away. Years, decades ago, I wouldn't have been like that, but today I am like that, and I just handle things with just being able to be more aware of my behaviors and aware of how I react to things, and
Beautiful.
not wanting to be able to, I don't want to cause people any anguish or any anger or any upsetness. So I always think before I speak. And when I was younger, I wasn't like that. I just
Yeah.
reacted. So
You have to learn the hard way. Thank you so much.
oh, you're very welcome. This has been a wonderful session. I really enjoyed having you on the show. I'd love to have you on the show again. I think people need to really understand more about how to overcome codependency and trauma in their lives. So many people suffer, and you can even sometimes you go into stores and you see people, and you could just tell by their face that they are not happy. They live in a
Yeah.
life that is not a positive life, and there is probably trauma going on in their life. And to be able to have an exit where they can,
Doesn't
they
have
can.
to be that way. Absolutely.
Exactly. So thank you so much, Dr. Nima, for coming on the show, sharing your knowledge, sharing everything with that you shared today. I think you're going to help a lot of people, that listen to this episode. And I really thank you for sharing your wisdom, sharing your knowledge, and and just your ability to want to help others is wonderful. I
Thank
thank
you.
you. Thank you
Thanks so
so much.
much, Stacy.
Oh, you're very welcome. You have a great day.